The following is a production of Galactic Netcasts.
This episode of the Podcast of Terror is brought to you by our friends at Statosphere Merch. Use our coupon code TERROR for 15% off your order at statospheremerch.com.
I like that tweet. Okay. All right. So we'll go ahead and get started. At the top of the show, I'll remind people where to go to donate. Midway through, if you can kind of toss that back to me for the same thing, or I'll just interject. I need to find my notes from last night. I'm not kidding that I had like 2 pages of notes on this movie. So
you take notes?
I do.
That sounds way too intelligent.
Well, mostly because I see funny things that I want to talk about and I don't want to forget them. So, I mean, they're not exactly notes that are going in the National Archive or anything, but, you know. All right. So we'll go ahead and get started. Kevin will join us here in a minute. So welcome back, everyone, for hour number 3 of the Wolf King Podcast Marathon for Autism. I'm Sean Burns, and joining me this hour, we're going to have one of the hosts of the Podcast of Terror, as well as Corey Scott, as well as my son. Before we get started, we wanted to remind folks to go over to bit.ly/WolfKingAutism to donate to the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network. Those are the folks we're helping to raise money for today. They're an organization that helps people with autism advocate for themselves in the workplace, in schools, for housing, and all different kinds of walks of life. They're a wonderful organization, and they could really use your support, and that's why we're doing this weekend. We're going to get started here for the Podcast of Terror, and so I am going to turn this over, the proceedings, to Mr. Corey Scott from Galactic Netcast's own Podcast of Terror. Hello, Corey, once again. How are you?
Hello. It sounded a little confusing at the beginning there. It almost implied that I was your son.
No. My son, Kevin, will also be joining us.
Did you forget to introduce me?
No, I said Corey Scott and my son, and I guess the N didn't quite go through, so it sounded like Corey Scott, my son.
Well, it's okay. Corey can be my brother. I'm all right with that.
It's a family thing.
Yeah.
It's not a family show, though.
No. No. I would like to start off by saying it's unfortunate my partner, Matt Stein, could not be here today. He has got other obligations with his band, Drawn the Lifeguard, who you should check out. But he's kind of in a better place because he didn't have to watch this goddamn movie.
I cannot agree more.
Actually, he'd seen it, and that was the thing, is when I was trying to choose a film, I had 2 to pick from, and this was one of them, and he said, well, I've seen that one, and I sure as hell won't miss not watching it again.
So you thought, oh, I'll make Sean and Kevin watch this one then.
Thanks a lot. Well, I don't want you to be my brother anymore, Corey.
You're out of the will, pal.
I'm the one who lives in the walls.
Oh, my God.
So the reason why, in particular, I chose this one is because we're nerdy guys. I know that we're all a little bit into the nerd culture, geek culture stuff. This has Katie Lotz in it.
Yes.
And she is very well known now for being Sarah on Arrow and now on Legends of Tomorrow. And I thought, if nothing else, we get to see Katie Lotz running around in underwear and a low-cut top for some of this film.
Yes. Yeah, I will admit that every one of my notes about Katie Lotz just says white canary this, white canary that, so
white canary needs to wear pants, yes. White canary should wear a helmet on the motorcycle, white canary.
I was really bummed out that there wasn't like a 20-minute motorcycle chase because she didn't put on pants before she tried to take off on it.
No, but instead we got a 40-second shot of her foot.
Yeah.
What the hell was that?
I thought it was directed by Quentin Tarantino.
That's exactly what I wrote down. It's like, this is like what happens if Quentin Tarantino and Fellini get together to make a film.
Fellini's like crawled out of his grave and just kicking Tarantino in the head for that statement. So one thing to note is that when Lotz did this in 2012, she'd actually done a short film before that that this was then based on. They extended it out to make the full movie. And then she was even kind enough to come back for the sequel, which we did not watch, although I tried to watch some of it last night and it just got a little too late and I only got halfway through it. But
was it any better than the
this
original?
This movie exists. What was that, Kevin?
Was it any better than the original?
No. No. In fact, no? It's
worse.
The original is considered good by a lot of people. And the sequel was considered a letdown. And I'm watching the sequel thinking, I'm not seeing a lot of differences here between the two movies. I don't know what was the breaking point for everybody, but
I'll admit that it's not a good movie, but we sure as hell had fun watching it.
Yeah, we laughed a lot.
You know, if you're going to watch this movie, watch it with someone because you could just do your own riff track the whole way through, and it's a lot of fun that way.
Yeah, and I've commonly said that the reason why I started the Podcast of Terror with Matt, or pushed him to start it, was one, because he used to talk about how he wasn't into sci-fi stuff, and it was always funny because he was the guy on Sci-Fi Geeks Club that didn't give a crap.
Yeah.
But he likes Arnold Schwarzenegger and he likes horror movies. And I said, well, Matt, when are we going to do a horror show together? And I guess Dave just kept pestering about that after that. And suck it, Dave, because you get what you get. But the reason why I wanted to do it besides that was because I wanted my wife to respect me. And my wife is the biggest horror fan on the planet. So when I said, oh, yeah, I've got to watch The Pact tonight, she's like, why are you watching that piece of shit? I'm like, the same reason I watch all these movies, baby. And so she did not have nice things to say about this either. She's like, that movie's the worst. That movie is the absolute worst. It's not the worst. It's mediocre ghost horror that takes a weird turn. But overall, yeah, we should get into the plot a little bit.
Yeah.
So the movie starts out with a woman named Nicole, who is staying at her mother's house. Her mother's just passed away. And she is trying to get her sister to come there for the funeral, Sister Annie, who is Katie Lotz's character. And she's not having very good luck with it. Annie is like, you know, Mom was really abusive to us. You know that it's just going to lead to you wanting to use drugs again. And Nicole has a daughter that she is staying at her cousin's place while she's in the house. And she goes to Skype with her daughter, and she keeps getting these weird, icky feelings. And her daughter, through the Skype, says, "Who's that behind you?" And she loses connection to her laptop and gets dragged into a room in the house and disappears. Lotz's character shows up, just assumes her sister has gone off on a drug-stupid walkabout because of having to deal with feelings of her mom. But then inside the house, she starts to have some weird feelings, and her cousin and niece comes to stay with her for the night, and then her cousin disappears. And so she starts to realize that there are supernatural aspects in place. She meets up with a local cop who doesn't really believe her, but still sort of humors her a little bit, has him come to the house. She finds a high school friend that was a psychic and tries to utilize her to figure out what's going on and if there are ghosts there and what's happening. And it just sort of goes from there.
Yeah, and the cop is played by Casper Van Dien.
Starship Troopers.
Yeah, and a very old. Has it been that long since Starship Troopers? Because he does not look like he aged well. I mean, he looked really grizzled.
Starship Troopers was mid-90s?
Yeah.
And not successful, so it's not like he went on the steak and lobster diet after Starship Troopers.
This is true.
Or Starship Troopers 3. Or any number of things that he's done. What I like about Van Dien is that he's not like overly pridefully. He had that kind of look that was really big then, of the sterling good looks and hard jaw, and like he was gonna be the next big thing. And then it just didn't take off for him. But then he kept coming back and doing the stuff and had a really good attitude about it. And I thought that was kind of nice.
Yeah. No, complete credit to him, because I've read a lot of articles of the where are they now kind of bent to them. And whenever they talk about him, he definitely does not seem to take himself overly seriously and seems to be grateful for just being able to work and be a part of this stuff. So, you know, yeah. I definitely give him credit for that. So,
yeah. And I mean, he didn't even come to this movie as being the hero or the grizzled good-looking boyfriend. He right. plays a part that I think was necessary, and he plays it pretty well.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, they...
So...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, where did the movie lose you?
What song did they play in the opening credits?
Yeah. you know, I don't know. It's...
Well, let's start there. There was no song in the opening credits.
Yeah.
This movie had a very low amount of background music at all to it, which is, we talked about this recently on an episode of Podcast of Terror. We were talking about the movie Entrance, and they had no ambient music. It was just stuff you would hear if they were actually playing a radio somewhere. Mm. But they still wound up with 3 pages full of song credits.
Gotcha.
This, they really downplayed that, and I don't know if it was budgetary or if it was an actual choice for the direction, but the only things that I really remember standing out as when they would use music for mood, it was that kind of drag across a violin sound, that the weird cacophony of off notes from each other that has gotten kind of more prevalent since... not Sinister, but one of those movies came out, the horror ghost movies these days. It's like, oh, it's something spooky's happening. Let's have someone torturing a violin.
Yeah.
Music becomes ominous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's another thing. Kevin and I watched it with the, I don't know if you watch with the closed captioning on. I've got a 5-year-old, so my Netflix and my television always has the closed captioning on just in case he comes in the room and starts making noise or whatever, so that I don't have to shoo him away so that I can, you know, understand what's going on. I can keep following the story. And there were some really fun things that they were doing with the closed captioning. It was almost like whoever had the closed captioning just had a copy of the script sitting there and was typing the stage directions as opposed to typing, you know, what was actually his sound. Because, yeah. Like, at least 3 or 4 times in the movie, Kevin and I looked at each other and went, oh, shit, something's going to happen, because at the bottom of the screen it would say, music becomes ominous, yeah. You know.
God damn it, Sean, you're going to make me want to see this again.
Well, and I think my favorite one was when she goes in and sits on the toilet, at the bottom of the screen it says, possibly urinating. it's like, okay. I mean, granted, she could possibly be doing something else, but, you know, it's just amazing to watch with closed captioning on, so.
Yeah, there was quite a few comments on IMDb, because that's where those things fester. As so, she just drip dries.
Yeah,
what's going on there.
Yeah,
kind of a horror movie of its own. Maybe that's why that ghost was picking her up and swinging her around, trying to air her out.
Yeah, could be. This movie had a lot of those little things that, like, I looked at it and just goes, that's a really weird choice. Like having the sister's cell phone ringtone be a normal phone. I mean, I know that that's a thing, but most people don't do that. And that just struck me as a really odd thing. It's like, why is your phone ringing like my phone did in the mid-80s?
Yeah.
You know?
As a person who's writing a story, we talked earlier about timelessness of films.
Mm.
And I think that if you... One, you'd have to pay, probably, if you had a ringtone that was a popular thing.
Yeah.
But two, using something that sounds like a phone that has gone back 40, 50 years, maybe that's a good idea, because it takes some of the element of this happened at this point in time and backburners it. I'm not saying that you don't realize it's a cell phone, but it does change the feeling when it's blatantly a cell phone and it's blatantly a Moto phone from the Austin Powers era,
right.
Or it's a iPhone from the last 3 years, it pinpoints in your mind what that time period is. And everything to take that away, we had reviewed It Follows a while back. And one of the great things about It Follows is that it utilized old TVs that were tube TVs that were almost always exclusively showing in black and white and older films. But there was a girl who was reading things on this sort of little e-reader that looked like a compact that they made for the movie. It doesn't actually exist because it wanted to belie any one time period. So in a lot of ways, it felt like it could have been an 80s horror film, but it was also done, obviously, in modern times when there were e-readers, but it didn't try to pinpoint any one moment.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of magical.
Yeah, no, I mean, I could definitely see the point. It was just, there were a lot of those little things in this movie that just seemed like really odd choices. Like, we joked about the shot of her foot. I mean, that thing lasted 40 seconds of her taking one step in slow motion, and it was just...
I thought her foot was going to break or something.
Yeah, you almost expected something,
yeah.
You know,
like
different.
I expected, like, a payoff out of that, but it just kind of ended.
Yeah, and it just... So,
well,
I mean,
that was...
Your
she'd
question...
also gotten the glass caught in her foot earlier.
Yeah.
And I was confused if this was going to be some sort of throwback to that. Like, we were going to see it split open from the cut or something start crawling out of it. But it was just this moment of she's in a dream, and this is when she suddenly becomes aware that it's a dream, and that's what pushes her to wake up.
Yeah. You know, it just... There were a lot of weird choices, I think, that took me out of it. Because you asked, like, where did the movie lose you? And I think, to me, that was really the big... It's a lot of little things. Like, when she was on the computer going to Google something, and she went to Global, which looked exactly like Google. And then my favorite thing is, if you watch when she brings up the list of serial killers and she looks for Judas, the entry... you know, very blatantly reads Wikipedia. Then she clicks on it and it takes her to this page called Nowipedia. And it's like,
well,
you know, it's just weird choices.
She's probably
that
got some sort of spyware on her computer that is just redirecting all of her choices.
Yeah, maybe the ghost was just telling
the
her
ghost
where to go.
Is one thing. The murder in the basement is another. But really, you should not have been using Kazaa.
Yeah.
That's your own damn fault, lady. That's a virus that's not going to go away on its own.
Yeah, very true. I just...
My uncle's a mass murderer, but at the same time, LimeWire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and like her dressing outside the church when she was there, you know, what was with the like the jumper and the shirt underneath it? She kind of, you know, I wrote down in my notes that, you know, White Canary dresses like a 90s Indigo girl.
Because, oh, yeah, the combat boots.
Yeah, the combat boots with the dress and the t-shirt. It just... There were just a lot of really weird choices, I guess, that the director made, and I just kept noticing them more than following the movie, I guess, so.
If I could excuse it, it would be probably to emphasize that she's not really together. She's kind of a mess in this at the beginning, and the end, she cleans up her act to adopt her niece, get to take care of her. You see this, the after of the film is her kind of like straightening things out and signing paperwork and doing all this stuff to become a more responsible adult.
Right. Yeah. Now the other thing too,
but I'm giving it credit that maybe it doesn't deserve.
Well, the other problem I think I had with it was the storytelling wasn't very clear. In a lot of places you were just expected to make a leap from one point to the other. Like when he referenced the niece being upstairs in the police department. That's the last time we know anything about the niece until the very end of the movie. So it's like,
yeah,
who had this?
Disappears.
Yeah. Who had this little girl while we're killing the serial killer and we're doing, you know, so they're just, to me, a lot of it had to do with the choices that were made in the storytelling just seemed very like scattered. You know, even the girl that she brought in, the psychic, she seemed blind at some point. She seemed not blind at other points. And I don't know if that was supposed to be something supernatural, but it just, you know, because at some points he would be leading her around by the arm. And then at other points she was making reference to the lights going out. And it's like, if you're blind, you don't see that, you know? And it's, so it was just very confusing as to how they were portraying that character. And you were just expected to just kind of leap around with the story.
Yeah, and this movie has a lot of similarities to the film Insidious. In fact, that's the movie I was thinking of with the weird violin aspect. And so Insidious, at some point, they involve their psychics to come in, which is a throwback itself to Poltergeist.
Right.
But that is a moment of, well, all this stuff is happening. Hey, I remember this girl from high school who was seen as sort of crazy, but people believe that she could talk to spirits, so I'm going to give her a random call and get her and her brother out here. And it seemed, again, very much like the moment from Insidious where the woman who's the psychic shows up with her two Geek Squad twins and they go through the house and set everything up. The brother was kind of the bouncer for his sister, but he also acted like they had a system in place and they've done this sort of thing before too. But then he gets really pissed off at her for involving her when things go sour.
Yeah.
The other thing is that this is a ghost movie that becomes a movie about a serial killer at the same time, which is a little bit tougher. Whereas something like The Frighteners did that, but had an actual connection between them. This is the ghost was a victim. And I can't figure out if it's trying to help the people that are in the house or not at the beginning. Because from the beginning, we see Nicole get dragged off into the room by seemingly nobody.
Mm.
But we know that later on, we find out that she was killed by the uncle that's living underneath the bedroom, the hidden bedroom.
Right.
But it didn't look like he was involved with dragging her in that room to begin with. So were they working in tandem? There's questions of whether the uncle was a ghost, although he gets physically killed in this.
Yeah.
There's some strange things that you're right. It doesn't make a lot of sense, and it doesn't tie it all up in a way that I think really was necessary for this film to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other thing is... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to agree with you that it just... That I guess, is the biggest problem I had is the scattershot nature of it, you know, and it's not really... It doesn't follow any kind of mythos of a ghost or of, you know, that we really, you know, can grab a hold of and say, okay, these are the, you know, like time travel movies, you establish your rules of time travel. In horror movies, you establish your rules of the monster. And this doesn't really, you know...
There don't seem to be any rules.
And half the time there doesn't seem to be a monster. You know, it's kind of back and forth. And, you know, and I hate to nitpick, and maybe I don't. Maybe I enjoy nitpicking, but that's besides the point. When she brought up the list of victims for the Judas Killer, they were the actual victims of the Zodiac Killer. So was that supposed to be a reference, or was that just lazy storytelling that they didn't just have a new page drawn up, web page drawn up for the movie that had fake victims? I mean, were we supposed to?
That's the question, is if the Judas Killer is supposed to be the Zodiac Killer in this. Which they don't go into, they don't explain. So if it wasn't planned, it was definitely lazy. If it was planned, it was not utilized correctly.
Yeah, poorly executed.
So it's not something that they said outright, oh, well, this seems like the Zodiac Killer, but this guy is only called the Judas Killer because that's how he identified himself.
Right.
We don't even understand the context for that.
Yeah.
The other thing is that they keep referencing her mom had some friend who was obviously the victim in the house, but we don't really understand. Like, when they show the picture, it looks like they're both pregnant at the same time.
Right.
And so it becomes, again, never explained, is Annie the daughter of this other woman instead of who she's thought was her mom? And is the person, the uncle... Was he her father and also the father of her sister? The mom obviously protects the uncle by letting him stay there.
Right.
But keeps him kind of cordoned off where he does watch everybody in the house throughout their childhood. We don't understand the other stuff with the mom's abuse, like what happened in the room that they got locked up in.
Right.
There's just so many things that they're mentioned in passing, but they're never explained.
Yeah.
And so there's no cohesion to how they all work together, which I don't need answers for everything, but I at least need to say, if you're going to bring all of these different elements in, we need to start to see a spiderweb pattern of how they where they originate and how they kind of blend out.
Right.
And it was just a lot of things to take in without any kind of context in the final plot.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with you. That's, I guess you've got to the crux of what my problem is that, like, what you were explaining with the brother and the uncle, maybe that he's the father and that they were both pregnant, I missed all of that in this movie. And your movie sounds so much better than what we watched last night, you know, that if they would have told that story, I would have been much more engaged, I think, and would have felt better coming out of it.
It was a lot of guesswork, though, where you had to kind of draw inferences. And, like, that's kind of cool for, like, some of the underlying story and stuff to kind of get you involved and get your mind engaged. But as far as, like, major plot points go, you have a job when you make a movie to tell a story. And to just leave out giant plot points like that is not really doing your job, I don't think.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's one thing if the people in the film don't get answers, and it's also okay if we don't get every answer.
Yeah.
Especially if they're planning on doing more movies down the road.
Yeah.
But it was so much of that. The only reason that I recognized a familial bond between the two, honestly, is because they both have heterochromia, which is Lotz's character Annie and the uncle both have two different colored eyes.
Right.
Yeah. And that's something that they do take the time to show us.
Yes.
But it's all for your speculation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would definitely agree with that. I'm going to pause for a second here just to remind folks listening. If you're listening live through any of the other venues, if you go over to the alphageekradio.com, go into the Trivia Geeks chat. We're hanging out in there. You can join us in there and chat with us. If you're listening live, let us know. So we could say hello. Kevin has a couple friends who are listening. I'm going to let him say hello to in a second. Also, if you have a chance and the opportunity, the reason we're doing all this weekend is to help raise funds and awareness for a group called the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network. They are folks who help folks with autism to have a voice in their own advocacy, whether it be for work-related issues or housing, schooling, the myriad of life issues that folks with autism face, they help them to be able to advocate for themselves. And if you're able to help donate, we ask that you go to bit.ly/WolfKingAutism. Just to let everybody know, that site is going to be up for the next 2 months. So if you're listening to the downloaded versions of these and it's not June 15th yet, you can still go over and donate there. We ask that in the in honor of name, you put Wolf King or Wolf King Marathon. In the in honor of email address, you put Wolf King Podcasts with an S at gmail.com. That lets them track how much is being generated by this marathon. And we have lots more programming coming up after Podcast of Terror, so we hope folks stick around. We're going until noon tomorrow, noon Eastern time on Sunday. Kevin, who do you have listening to the podcast right now?
Well, I'm not sure if they're still listening or not, but they were as of a couple of minutes ago. My friends Travis and Will, who wanted to know if I was intimidated during the round table by everybody else's superior nerd intellect. The answer is yes, I was, as a matter of fact.
We all bow to Brad's superior nerd intellect when it comes to that.
And if there's a way to recover your feeling of self-worth, it's doing the Podcast of Terror.
Yes. All
right.
There's nothing to elevate to here.
Yeah. Gotcha. Well, and here I at least like saw the movie that we were talking about, so I felt a little bit better about that. Like the other one, I was just kind of lost on the topics we were talking about. So
yeah, this movie was, like I said, I did have fun with this movie, so I don't want everybody to think that I'm totally like, you know, it had its values, but it also definitely had its gaping holes. So
yeah, and with any movie that we do, we know that a lot of horror movies are basically shit stains. And we're okay with that. That's the burden we take on for you, the listener. No, it's because we love those shit stain movies.
Oh, yeah.
We love the great ones when they happen, but we love the bad ones too. And even though we'll tear something up a little bit because it doesn't necessarily make sense, or because it's making a lot of dumb jokes in the middle of it, or it's just gleefully happy to crap all over the celluloid, that's fine. We enjoy it just the same.
Yep. Yeah.
Plus the best parts of the discussion.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's the fun of watching these with people or having these podcasts to be able to go back and, you know, talk about them. And that's always been, you know, that was what I was envious of before I started doing podcasts. And I had my own methods of going and talking about the things I wanted to.
All right. So usually we would do a ranking. We'd give our scores off of the film based off of three categories. So ranking 0 through 5, the first category is rewatchability. How likely are you to ever choose to sit through this goddamn mess again?
Kevin, why don't you kick that one first?
Well, if I had to watch it by myself, I'd probably say 1. If I could watch it with somebody else, especially somebody who I think would be able to make jokes about it the entire way, like we did last night, I would probably give it a 4.
Yeah. And remember, zeros are allowed. So if you're talking about by yourself, you can say,
well, then
I'll say
0.
I'd rather be on a train to Auschwitz.
I did not enjoy this movie. I enjoyed making fun of this movie. And, you know, so I think watching it with somebody else, I would definitely, because it's only an hour and a half.
Yeah.
It's not like it's a huge waste of time or anything. It's, you know, it's not like watching The Lord of the Rings if I didn't enjoy that, which I fully do. But it's just those movies are so damn long.
Yeah.
But I think if I could watch it with somebody that would be joking about it the entire time and making fun of it with me, I would definitely consider rewatching this movie. But otherwise, I don't think in a million years I would ever consider going back to it.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think I would give it a 0 for rewatchability if it's by myself. If I'm being joined by my friends Captain Morgan or Jim Beam, maybe I could do it. I do think it would be fun to sit down with a group of people who are like-minded and have similar senses of humor and just, you know, sit and just, you know, have fun with this, you know. I would definitely say it's worth watching in that respect. So I don't know if I would go 4, but I might go 3 with others, but definitely 0 by myself. No interest there.
I mean, this is definitely going on my movie that focus on feet playlists, but that's my own cross to bear. This Daniel Day-Lewis, anything Uma Thurman's done. So, yeah, I would say I have to give it at least a 1 because I did decide to go right from it to the sequel, and I'm only halfway through that, but I'm pretty compelled to finish watching it at this point, even though I feel as stupid as somebody who sat through all of Jaws 4 willingly. But a 1 is okay. I don't think I'm going to be looking. It's not going to stay in my playlist for very long, but I'm okay with if it's on, maybe I'll try to dissect a little bit better the next time.
Yeah.
All right. So the next rating is story. Again, 0 through 5. Did the story grab you in any way? Is there elements of it that you thought were good, even if the overall film wasn't fantastic?
Kevin, why don't you go ahead and start these?
Start again?
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
For story, I'll give it a 1.7 repeating. I didn't think the story by itself was all that bad, but like we had talked about earlier, there was a lot of, you had to make a lot of inferences about the movie and kind of try to pick apart what's going on. I've definitely seen movies that were a lot worse at telling their story. So I definitely wouldn't give this one a 0. I probably wouldn't give it a 1, but I don't know if I'd go so far as to say a 2 either. So I'm going to go with like a 1.7.
Yeah, I think I would give it a 2 only for the fact that, and honestly, I'll give it a 2 now having had the conversations with you, because there are story elements there that are compelling, but they don't do anything with them. So I can't really give them high, but, you know, recognizing that, yeah, I almost want to see, like, fan fiction out there that ties all this together and go and read that or something, you know. So there are elements.
Yeah,
so
that's exactly what I was going to say, is it too, because it seems like there was something there that just wasn't exactly explored in the film.
Mm.
And I don't know if it was cutting room floor stuff or if it was just bad direction, but there was something underlying that was interesting. And I think maybe that's why this film is looked at as a good movie by a lot of horror fans, is that it expands your mind into thinking about it, even though it's not incredibly watchable. All right, and last one is scariness. Again, 0 to 5. Did this make you want to pee your britches?
Kevin's thinking.
I'm thinking, yeah.
He's pondering.
This is my thinking face.
Got to make a thinking noise, though. It's an audio podcast. There you go.
For scariness, honestly, and I'm going to blame you for this. But I think for scariness, I'm going to have to give it a 2 because there really wasn't that much that I found terribly frightening. I think the scariest part of this movie was probably when Annie was wandering around the halls after Liz disappeared and my dad decided it would be funny to yell boo at me.
That was, as dads are wont to do.
That was the scariest part of the movie. So I definitely can't say that this movie was particularly scary. And I'm somebody who gets frightened very easily by movies, especially jump scares. And I just didn't find this movie to be that scary. So I'd have to give it like a 2, probably.
Yeah, I'd almost go directly to a 0 because it just, it did nothing for me from a scare factor. It was, it seemed more dramatic than frightening to me. You know, I really didn't get, you know, scared as a horror movie, maybe more of just that, maybe a little suspense thriller kind of thing, but nothing to me was straight up scary.
Of course, I was scared by the intermittent Wi-Fi. That always terrifies me.
Yes.
We had the same problem, so.
Yeah.
I hear you.
I will say that when the movie changed and it goes from being strictly a supernatural ghost movie to a movie involving a serial killer, the moment when she's sitting there and she's doing the Ouija board thing with her cross necklace on the floor, and then the floor pops open and this guy comes out of it.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of took me by surprise. That was a good startle. And he was suitably creepy, and him crawling through the spaces of the house. And it went from a Insidious to a People Under the Stairs kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was taken aback by that. So I will admit that I got squeamish for that. And for that reason, I'll give it a 2.
We actually had kind of funny discussion about the Ouija board thing last night, because when her friend Stevie said that she was going to give her something, I said, how much you want to bet she's going to give her a Ouija board? And then we saw her drawing with the marker. My dad said, well, I don't understand why she's making her own, because they sell those things for like $8.
Yeah, Parker Brothers makes
they
things.
Do. Yeah. But again, we'd have to pay Milton Bradley for the license. And yeah. I think a lot of this was how much money can we save by doing everything as generically as possible.
And to go back, I don't think I want to change from a 0, but I will say that I did jump when Casper Van Dien took the knife to the throat, because that came out of nowhere. But it looked so bad that it was hard. Other than the jump scare of, oh, crap, where did that come from? You very quickly got over it and went, oh, okay.
When he started shooting wet clay out of his throat.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, Kevin made the comment that it looked like the stuff from Crimson Peak, because we saw that last year, and it's like, yeah, you're kind of right. It did kind of look like that, except a little wetter. So it just wasn't a very good visual effect, and kind of immediately took you out of whatever scare you got from the knife.
But it was weird, too, because then later on, when he cut her with the knife in the closet, it looked like real blood.
Yeah, they did better there.
It's not like they just didn't know how to do it. They just didn't.
Right.
Well, it gives you the idea that his character was a big user of skull, which is a chewing or spitting tobacco that you just kind of suck on. So it was probably throat cancer.
Mm.
I'm kidding. Again, we're looking for any way to include advertising in this without actually bringing the name of the people up. But no, it was a little weird. But again, that was also the jump scare, was because it went from being a ghost movie to now somebody's got a knife in the throat.
Yeah.
So it changed the rules on us, and that's never fair.
Right. Yeah, it's like a lot of times people will use the analogy with the movie Stripes. You know, that was a great movie for the first half when it was a comedy, and then all of a sudden it becomes about this weird RV for the second half of the movie, and it lost its edge. And so, you know, same thing with this. It was, at first it's a ghost movie, then it's a serial killer movie, and it kind of really, the shift comes from nowhere, so.
Yeah, and this had no John Candy.
True.
I love John Candy.
Well, I could see John Candy being the uncle crawling up out of the floor. I'd rather that than having lost the man.
Well, you know,
even after Who's Harry Crumb?
Well, I was going to say I could almost picture him as Harry Crumb as the cop, because, you know, with the camera and everything. So.
I can take some pictures if you want.
Yeah,
the Batman cop.
Yes,
Batman cop.
Yeah, he had one of those
voices.
All right,
and so. That is what we do on the Podcast of Terror: is we go through this so you don't have to.
Yeah, we wouldn't recommend that you try this at home, folks. Yes.
Not unsupervised, anyway.
No. So while I have you guys on here, Sean, you've already done it, mm-hmm. but do you guys have recommendations for us? Because that's what we try to do. We try to bring stuff that we wouldn't normally choose ourselves to do shows, and so we look for recommendations, be it from guests or from Twitter followers, whoever. What are the horror movies that you guys are into that you think we should be talking about?
I've only seen like 3 horror movies. So
Kevin's very uninterested in horror movies, yeah, for the most part, unless it has something to offer above the horror. Like, we went and saw Crimson Peak for his birthday, and the reason for that was it was what was playing at the IMAX theater in Philly when we were, yeah, there for his birthday.
That movie had a pretty good storyline to it, though.
Yeah.
It was interesting, so.
There's definitely a lot there to talk about. As far as, like, horror movies and stuff go, I tend to lean towards more of the suspense and just, you know, kind of not knowing where they're going to go with some of the stuff. Like, I'll be honest, the movie that scared me the most in my life was probably 7. I had a real hard time after watching 7. That movie was creepy as hell. And I don't know if that really... I don't know if, like, true horror aficionados would say that that's a horror movie as much as it is a suspense movie or something, but, you know, I got kind of bothered by that movie. And
no, absolutely. And it gives you a feeling of terror throughout it, mm-hmm. as he's creating these scenarios for the people. I mean, it's, in a lot of ways, it's a precursor to the Saw movies.
Yes.
Saw doesn't have the same quality of story, although I like Saw because it does tell a story and it is more interesting than, say, a Hostel film. But 7 was very dark, very spooky. You didn't know what was coming through it. I didn't know anything about it before I saw it when it came out in the theater. It was quite a surprise for me, and it pays off in the end, which is a big deal.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that is a textbook definition of payoff for a movie. And, you know, and maybe I'm way off base or whatever, but I was stunned that year when Morgan Freeman wasn't nominated for that movie. I thought his performance in that was one of the best that I've seen, you know. And
yeah.
And Kevin Spacey as the villain, the killer, you know, Brad Pitt does Brad Pitt, which is, you know, fine if you like him, if, you know.
He walks on screen and looks good.
Well, yeah. No, and he does a good job. I mean, Brad Pitt is a good actor. He does good work, but I don't find anything overly wonderful about him. But he's one of those people that I will watch what he's in because he's a solid actor. But
yeah.
But Morgan Freeman just, you know, completely chews up the scenery in that film. And so to a certain extent, Kevin Spacey. And that was really the first thing. I don't know if that was the first thing he did, but that was the first thing I ever remember seeing Kevin Spacey in, was 7. And just,
I mean, he'd definitely been in other stuff before that, but it was not well known. And that was kind of a good year for him because that came out right around the time of The Usual Suspects.
Right. That's what I was going to say. I didn't know if it was before or after that. So, you know, but it sounds like it was pretty much right in that same vein.
Yeah. And I agree on Brad Pitt. I think Brad Pitt is someone who will lose himself in a role when it's the right role, and he's taken some brave parts before or done things that were bit parts. You go back to Brad Pitt in 12 Monkeys or mm-hmm. in True Romance, where he's not just playing the typical good-looking guy, or in Snatch. You know, he's capable of doing a lot, but he's obviously... He's a big star that Hollywood wants to put in blockbusters more than they want to put him into little quirky parts.
Yeah.
So it used to be that he'd do those things because it was a way for him to have fun in between the things where he made a ton of money. Mm-hmm. Now I think he's probably a little more obligated towards family time and stuff that he doesn't get to, you know, I make the blockbuster, but then I want time off more than I want to go and work on an independent film at the same time.
Right.
Although some of the things that he and his wife are producing, it seems like it had the ability to do that. And as far as Morgan Freeman, yeah, the movie didn't get him an Oscar nom, but he did get to go on and kind of replay the same character in a way in the two Alex Cross movies he did, Kiss the Girls and Along Came a Spider.
Yeah.
They sort of said, well, he was so great in Seven, I want to see more stuff like Seven. And James Patterson's like, I can take care of you.
Yep.
I got you covered.
Yeah. I thought, as far as that goes, and, you know, maybe this isn't, going out on a limb here or anything, but I definitely liked his portrayal of Alex Cross a lot better than I did Tyler Perry's performance as Alex Cross, which honestly wasn't bad. And I can't really talk about the Madea movies because I just don't understand them.
Right, we're not the audience. Yeah, I accept that.
Right. But his portrayal of the lawyer in Gone Girl, I thought he was fantastic in that.
He was decent as Alex Cross. Right. I think it was just a terrible Alex Cross movie. The stuff outside of him was bad. The guy from Lost playing just had no character at all. And then it just really seemed like we're just going to kill every female in this movie around the main dude.
Yes. Absolutely.
But that's a fault of a film. I think Perry is someone who's very capable, but he doesn't do a lot of movies that are aimed towards me as a viewer. But that's probably the best part, is because he's aiming it towards people who are underserved.
Yes.
For films and for actors up on the screen. And he's incredibly successful because of that. It shows that there's a hungry audience who wants something for them. And if you're not going to give it to them, then they're going to give it to themselves. And whether or not they're the greatest movies in the world or not, they're succeeding. Now, if we gave them incredibly high quality films, or if we made it more possible, this is better, for them to give themselves high quality films, imagine how much more successful it would be and how much untapped potential is there. But Hollywood hasn't gotten that clue yet. We're starting to see some movement. I'm very excited for things like the Black Panther movie. I'm really excited for the Luke Cage Netflix series coming up. I'm excited about the new female lead in the next Thor film.
Right.
But until we see it, we don't really know. And it's still, it's only half movements at this point. We've got our first real black superheroes in a quite expansive Marvel universe. Is that enough? And we'll see. But at least I expect them to be quality films with quality actors, and that's important to me.
Yeah. All right. Well, Corey, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the Wolf King Podcast Marathon for Autism. Thank you for the last hour as part of the Galactic Netcast Roundtable, and for this hour doing your podcast of terror with us. And thank you for picking the pact, because as much crap as I gave it, it was definitely an enjoyable experience to sit with Kevin and watch that. We had a lot of fun, and fathers and sons don't always get as much time as we should to do those kinds of things. So it was definitely enjoyable in that.
We probably had more fun with that movie than we had any right to.
Yeah.
This really being completely honest here.
I mean, I've listened to your episodes of the X-Files show, and I've really enjoyed that. I enjoy your interactions with each other there, so I was glad to be able to talk about this movie with you guys.
Great. Thanks again so much for coming on. Folks, stick around. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to have Streaming Geeks. We're going to look at another movie on Netflix called Adult Beginners. We have some things to say about that one, too, I think. So stick around for that. Jeannie and Donna are going to join us in the next hour for Streaming Geeks. In the meantime, we're going to take a short break, and if you can, head on over to bit.ly/WolfKingAutism. Throw $1, $2, $5, $10, whatever you can afford towards the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network. That's who we're here for this weekend, providing you with hopefully 24 hours of entertainment that you can then go and help out this group, help those with autism to advocate for themselves in the workplace, school, housing, and other areas of life. When you go over there, just be sure to put in Wolf King in the in honor of name field, and in the in honor of email field, put Wolf King Podcasts with an S at gmail.com, so they can kind of track how well we're doing with the marathon. Gory again, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll be back very shortly with an episode of Streaming Geeks.
Stay scary, everybody.
All right. Very cool. Thank you, Corey.
Thank you. And thank you guys for doing this. I think this is amazing. My youngest brother has Asperger's, and unfortunately I live across the country, so I haven't been as involved with my siblings as I would want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience is limited, but he's an amazing person. He's very capable. He's incredibly smart. He's super driven towards the things that are important to him. And I have a lot of hero worship for the guy. And it's just nice to see something like this being done to build understanding and awareness for something that has sadly become so prevalent, but is also so misunderstood by people to really kind of help and accept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, this is a very personal, you know, cause, obviously, for me with my daughter having Asperger's. But coming across so many folks that I've met through the podcasting who have children, brothers, sisters, cousins, it has become so pervasive that it's something that touches almost everyone. You know, almost everyone knows someone who is touched by this disorder in some way, that it's really important that we can, you know, help to fund them. And, you know, it's so hard because there's so many people out there looking, and there's so many, you know, great causes. And, you know, this isn't any better than heart disease or cancer or Alzheimer's or any of them. But, you know, it's what resonates with you. And, you know, hopefully there's some folks out there that this resonates with as well, and they can hear what we're doing and, you know, feel good about where things are headed. So.
Absolutely. We all do what we can. And that's all we can do. But I still wanted to say that I appreciate it.
Yep, and I appreciate you saying that. Thanks, Corey.
All right.
And
well, you have a great
yeah, go ahead.
21 hours left?
Yep, 3 down, 21 to go.
We did a 24-hour comic book day a few years ago, my friend and I, where we had to write and draw a comic. I did it as the writer. He did it as the artist. In a 24-hour period, he definitely had a lot more of the work than I did, but just being awake for that amount of time and trying to be creative at the same time is very difficult.
I think my cardiologist would kill me if I stayed up for 24 hours straight, so Carrie is thankfully taking part of the overnight shift for me, so I'm going to get a couple of hours off tonight, but I think I'm on for 19 of the 24 hours, so... Yeah, it's gonna be fun. Tomorrow at 11 a.m., I ought to be fairly punch drunk for the last hour. So
the next day, you feel like you're walking through Jell-O.
Yes. Yep. Well, I think Sunday at noon, I'm going to bed. So as soon as I'm signed off, I'm going to bed. The editing can wait until Monday. So, all right.
Thanks so much, guys.
Yep. Bye bye.
Next week on the podcast of Terror.
Next week, we're going to be discussing the movie Blood Dolls. Corey chose it. I've never seen it. I have no idea if it's going to suck. It's probably going to suck because Corey picked it, but we hope you enjoyed the Wolf King Studios marathon hour of the podcast here, and we will be back next week with a regular episode.
Stay scary, everybody.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Podcast of Terror. You can help Galactic Netcast pay for our web and audio hosting by supporting us on Patreon by going to patreon.com/galacticnetcasts and pledge as little as $1 a month.
You have been listening to a production of Galactic Netcasts. For more about this show and others, go to gncasts.com. That's GNCASTS.com.